Hello and welcome to today's episode of Ask Alan. And this week we're joined by SMSF coach Olivia Long from Prime Financial Group. G'day, Olivia. Great
Hello.
To talk to you again.
Thank you.
I hope things are going okay over there in Adelaide.
Everything is. The weather is changing, however.
Yes, it is.
I know.
It is changing.
Very unfortunate.
Big picture and small picture.
Yep.
Please remember, everyone, that our answers are general advice and not personal advice, so they may not be appropriate for you, so please bear that in mind. And if you've got any questions, please feel free to submit them to the Ask Alan section of the Eureka Report website, either for me or for Olivia. And away we go. Olivia.
Okay. The first question today, Alan, is from John, who says, great podcast. Keep up the good work. On the 24th of February, Olivia answered my question about the COVID-19 early release and said I could not recontribute it to the fund above contribution caps. I recently received an email update from the ATO with the following link to a form called Notice of Recontribution of COVID-19 Early Release Amounts. So is my understanding correct that I have until June 2033 to recontribute the 10K and that I can do it despite me already contributing 330 non-concessional in August 2021? Now, John, thank you very much for coming back to me, because this is actually something new. And the majority of people that I've spoken to have also not come across this. So the great news for listeners is that there is now a COVID-19 recontribution. So they are a personal contribution that the ATO will exclude from an individual's non-concessional contribution cap. Now, while the ATO were very firm at the time the relief was made available that you could not get it back into super, they seem to have totally backflipped on this, as this contribution can now be made between the 1st of July 2021, as you mentioned, up until the 30th of June 2030. The only catch is you have to use the approved form available from the ATO, which must be submitted to your super fund at the time you make the contribution. So in other words, yes, John, you can go ahead and make that. The next question from Ravi says, I have a trust account and an SMSF. Can I buy or transfer the ASX shares between my trust account and the SMSF? Please advise. Now, Ravi, there are strict rules around an SMSF requiring assets from a related party, and generally it's not allowed. However, listed securities are one of the exceptions. So the rules are the shares must be acquired from your trust at market value, or else any income derived from the shares will be treated as non-arm's length income and taxed at the highest marginal tax rate. So pretty well the fund can buy the shares from the trust, or the shares can be contributed to the fund either as a concessional or non-concessional contribution. But just please note that the transfer or sale will trigger a capital gains tax event in the trust's account. So this really should be taken into consideration prior to any transactions. The next question from Jennifer is a great one. It says, I am a little confused regarding the intent and implication of the various balances, namely retirement accumulation, preserved and non-preserved, and within those tax-free and taxable components. I understand that non-preserved balances can be paid at any time. Preserved amounts can only be used when a member reaches preservation age. A taxable means that capital gains tax must be paid when an asset is sold. And she goes on to ask a few more questions there. It says, I have explored the Eureka website and discovered two statements which raise a question with me, namely, when making a contribution, it would depend on the split between taxable and tax-free components. And once you turn age 65, your super balance becomes unrestricted non-preserved. What exactly does this mean? All of these questions are very, very important and really vital that people understand what they mean in relation to their super. So I've provided quite a detailed response. And Jennifer, just take a quick look at the website once it's published, I'd suggest. The next question from Alex says, I have a question regarding the best ways to minimise capital gains tax on a second property. To set the scene, the property was originally our home, and we lived there for around 10 years. We then moved interstate and bought a second property to live in whilst renting out the original. It's been rented now for around 10 years. We had the property valued before we left, so we have a clear indication of what it was worth, but I'm trying to figure out the impact of moving back to this property before selling it. My understanding is that if we sell it without moving back, then we pay capital gains tax, which will be based on 50% of the price of the sale minus valuation. That amount would then be taxed at my income tax rates. If we were to move back in there, is there a period of time we need to live in it to have it back as a personal residence and therefore not subject to capital gains tax? The other option might be to roll the property into my super fund to take advantage of the lower tax rates. Any advice, welcome. So, Alex, firstly, unfortunately, you cannot actually roll a property into a super fund if it's a residential property. So let's rule that idea out. And secondly, the market value of the property when it was first rented actually becomes the new cost base for the property. So the gain is then calculated as the sale price less the new cost base and then apportioned based on the period rented versus the period it was used as the main residence the second time around. So if the total period after moving out is 20 years and if it's rented for 10 years and then used again as a main residence for 10, then yes, tax is applicable at 50% of the gain. The next question from Hamish is a good one, says, can you explain what the deal is with nominating beneficiaries on your super? Does this have any negative implications? Do you get taxed more when they're on there? And does this help avoid the death tax at all? Is there any way of avoiding death tax on super? So quite simply, superannuation isn't automatically dealt with as part of your will, if people actually in fact have one. The benefit in listing your beneficiaries on your super is to ensure that your superannuation and any life insurance that might be attached to it is actually paid to the person you want to direct it to. So you definitely don't get taxed and there are no other repercussions of having your death benefit nomination in place. There are ways of avoiding death tax on super by way of what's known as a recontribution strategy. These strategies can be complex to work out, so I would recommend speaking to an advisor if that's a strategy that you'd like to sort of implement. But yes, it can be done. And the final question for me today comes from Neil and Anne, who say, with the downsizer contribution to super, which looks really attractive, what happens if you are an older couple with super in retirement or pension mode and we don't have any accumulation accounts anymore? Can we still take advantage of this scheme? And the answer to that is that yes, you can. Just make sure you visit the ATO's website and search for their eligibility criteria and then lodge the appropriate paperwork. So there you go. Short and simple this week, Alan.
Thank you, Olivia. That's great. And we'll see you next month.
Wonderful. Thanks, Alan.
Okay, now some questions for me. Thanks very much, Olivia, who has to take off. Got a meeting to go to. So thanks a lot. See you later, Olivia. And I'll see you next month. Now, I've got a couple of questions to begin with about Magellan. Brent says he's concerned about it. Share price has tumbled. They appear to be losing several large investors. Ravi says, what about Hamish Douglas's resignation? Is that an advantage or a disadvantage? Can he return to work after medical leave? Well, I don't know about that, Ravi. I'm not entirely sure what's wrong with him, to be honest. They haven't said what's going on. I'm not sure there's anything particularly wrong with him, but he needs to have some time off. So, look, maybe he'll be back, but it's hard to say. Don't know. As for the share price, well, look, yes, they're losing several large investors. I would say that Chris Mackay's got his job cut out to get them back to where they were. It's true that Hamish Douglas was the public face and, you know, he was really what Magellan was all about. And now that he's gone, I do think that they are going to struggle to get back to anything like where they were. So, look, as to whether it's as bad a situation as AMP, I doubt it. I mean, I think they remain a pretty good business, but the trouble is that they've had a pretty big fall from grace recently, and I certainly wouldn't buy them. Whether I'd sell them at this point, I'm not sure. That's a different matter, really. I think probably it is about time we've got Chris Mackay on to talk about the business and what they're doing. So, look, we'll put it down for an interview. I think that's a good. That's the best thing. Robert says, hi, Alan. Maybe a year ago I asked about PVE, Po Valley Energy, and you were good enough to ring the company. They said they couldn't say anything because an announcement would be made in a couple of weeks. As far as I could see, no announcement happened. So I'm wondering if you knew any more. Also, I think it's outstanding that you contact so many organisations in response to subscribers' questions. Yes, well, no worries. I'm happy to do it. As for Po Valley Energy, look, I didn't follow up, unfortunately. I've been looking through. There doesn't seem to have been an announcement. I was having trouble finding out what's going on with the company. They were having a lot of trouble with Italian regulations as to whether they can can access their gas fields, particularly particularly onshore. So they've got offshore and onshore, and I'm not sure how they, you know, whether the Italian government's going to let them do it. So I think it's still up in the air, really. You would think that with the Ukraine invasion and the fact that Europe in general has to find alternatives to Russian gas, that they'd be falling over themselves to let Po Valley start their gas fields in Italy, you would think. But nothing much has been going on there. So, look, I think it is time we spoke to them again. So they'll go onto our list for an interview fairly soon. Thanks for that, Robert. Bernard says, I've an interest in investing in areas ancillary for EVs, such as charging stations and lithium battery makers. The companies can be Australian or overseas. I have a preference not for companies that are too early in their development phase, but instead are in production already or well on the way to being commercial operations. Do you know any companies that fill this criteria or even an ETF? But I want to avoid start type companies that may be included in an ETF structure. Well, the ETFs generally tend to invest in large companies, not little ones. And I'm just there. If you go onto the ETPs, the Exchange Traded Products section of the ASX website, you'll see a section there called Equity Global Sectors. And there are a few ETFs that specialize in lithium and electric vehicles. There's one, Beecher Shares, got an electric vehicles and future mobility ETF, they call it. And the code is DRIV, Drive or DRIV. there's also an ETF called ACDC, which is battery value, battery companies, technology and lithium companies. So they're the main ones to look at, I think, for ETFs. There aren't many companies that are well established in Australia as electric vehicle businesses that you can invest in on the ASX. There's a couple of battery businesses, but really they're sort of fairly early stage ones. If you're looking for something that's already well established, there's not much in the ASX apart from those ETFs, and they're global ETFs. And, of course, there's Tesla, which is just going through about to have a share split. That might be worth looking at as well. So I hope that helps. Apart from that, have a look on the Exchange Traded Products section of the ASX website yourself and see if you can see anything that appeals to you. Warren says, hi, Alan, hope you're well. I was wondering if you have any insights and knowledge about why Charter Hall has been performing so poorly these past 3 months. I invested in early October 2021 and they performed very well up to December 21. From there, it's been downhill and I can't really see why. Okay, I don't really know, Warren, so we'll have to interview them. They'll go on our list. We'll get to them in the next couple of weeks. Brian says, hi, Alan, I noticed your daily charts haven't been updated for about 5 months. Are you likely to continue with the charts? I have found them useful. Look, Brian, they're on the ABC website, so we thought it wasn't much point putting them on our website as well. But look, if more people would like to see the charts, let me know and we'll think about putting them back up. It was just a bit of an effort to do it and we didn't seem to be getting anything out of it and we didn't seem to know, very few people seemed to be looking at them and we were doubling up with the ABC. So if there's more people than Brian who are interested in that, let us know. Simon says, is there a risk in a wife and her husband using the same superannuation provider and fund? My wife is a long-term Queensland government employee, Q Super defined benefit and accumulation accounts with a reasonable balance for her age. I recently stopped work for the Commonwealth and I'm considering changing from PSS to Q Super. I figure there's a small risk of Q Super failing and a larger risk of the Q Super Fund producing poor returns over a time frame, but do those risks warrant keeping our accounts with separate providers? I can't see a good reason to switch unless you think Q Super is a much better fund than PSS. And in that case, I don't think there's any reason for your wife and you to be in the same fund. I don't think there's a particular reason for that. And the only reason for going out of PSS is because you think the destination would be a better fund, producing a better return, in which case you might as well look more broadly than Q Super, it seems to me. I mean, if you particularly like Q Super and like their service and so on, fine, go ahead. But you might want to look around to see if there's anything better than Q Super, because if you're in the business of moving, you might as well move to something that's particularly good. Ian says, "Hi, Alan. I enjoy listening to your thoughts and interviews, so thanks for that. I've invested a lot in Antiris Technologies and love their new transcatheter aortic valve replacement advance. I'd love to hear you interview their CEO." Well, as it happens, I'm speaking with the CEO of Antiris on Monday, Wayne Patterson. So look out for that, Ian. Alan says, "Hi, Alan. I own 20,000 ISX shares. My understanding is that they have been suspended by the ASX, so I can't trade them. Does that mean that they are now unsaleable? Should I write them off? Is there any hope that they will get reinstated to the ASX?" Well, they're suing the ASX for damages, so I reckon there's not much chance of them getting back on the ASX in the short term, because they're having a blue. And it does mean that they're unsaleable for a while, unless they find some way of providing a market for the shares other than the ASX. So watch this space, I'd say. Alan, you're going to have to wait to see what's happening. You might want to contact the company, give them a call and see what's going on. Or have a look on the website at their announcements on their website to see if they've got any updates for shareholders. Ben says, "Hi, Alan. I thought it would be a good time to ask Paul Keating on the show and wonder if you have ever interviewed him. In terms of the upcoming election and the fact that you have also had a chat to Malcolm Turnbull, I enjoy Ask Alan and the broad range of articles in the Eureka Report, and I'm a relatively recent subscriber. I have interviewed Paul Keating a few times over the years, dating back to when I was editor of the Financial Review in the 1980s and he was treasurer. So, yes, but that's a good idea. Let's get him on. And finally, a question from Scott. Given global unrest, is now a good time to buy gold and or silver?" Yes, probably. If you're looking for an alternative, something that was, I wouldn't advise buying a lot of it. But I think it is regarded as a reasonable allocation to put some of your money into in an inflationary time. We are in an inflationary time and an uncertain time, and so gold does seem to be regarded as a reasonable portfolio allocation. So yes, I guess it is, Scott. It's not something I particularly do. I don't really understand gold as an investment. I know a lot of people do, and they put a proportion of their money into gold as a defensive asset. If it's ever a good time to buy gold, probably now is one of those times. Thanks everyone for your company. And thanks Olivia Long for her, as always, her great answers to questions. I'll be back in a fortnight. Myself and Olivia will be back in a month. So if you've got any questions, put them on the website, the Ask Alan section, and I'll see you then.